Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, where we export Swedish unicorness.
No buzzwords, just real life stories with Sweden's most innovative thinkers and doers. A podcast made by me, Sandra Bourbon.
And me, Sara Hermansson.
Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast. My name is Sandra Bourbon, and today I will talk to Johanna Hultén. Johanna is the founder of C-Store, and she's also the CEO there. She is a warrior. She is here to fight global warming. She has come up with two deep tech innovations where she actually solves the problem by capturing carbon dioxide in the oceans and also how to convert carbon dioxide so it doesn't need to be stored. In this episode, Johanna will share that with you, and she will also talk a lot about her journey and how she started with this idea and now she is developing this idea and how to make this work when it's actually deep tech that needs to be developed a lot before you can sell it. We also talk about the business model for carbon capturing and how it works. Let's go! Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, Johanna Hultén.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm great. It's a sunny day and I've done some shopping, so I actually found some things I needed for my tests here at home. So it's a good day.
That's really good. It sounds a little bit better. I have done shopping as well. That was for clothes, but
okay.
It's secondhand still, so good for planet,
yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. And I need clothes, otherwise I will freeze. Soon it's winter here, so. For the people that doesn't know you, Johanna, who are you and what's your background? Because now you're the CEO and founder of C-Store. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But like, who are you and your background?
Yes, so I'm Johanna. I'm from Stockholm. I grew up in Nacka, where I also live right now. I have a background as an engineer. I studied at KTH in Stockholm, material science and nanotechnology. And I worked in the energy business mainly since I graduated. But my first initial job was at the startup Nanologica that developed nanomaterials. It was really great to start my career there because I learned both how to work in the lab and also to meet when we were out on meetings with the different customers and trying to find the applications and new partners in this very, very early phase. But after that, I worked in the nuclear business at Westinghouse, both in Västerås and in Brussels. It was mainly focusing on sales. Selling service projects to the nuclear business. And then I jumped to Vattenfall, where I worked mainly. And I worked as a project manager and in a very broad manner. So I really worked from IT to hybrid for fossil-free steel. So it was really great to work at Vattenfall. It's such a great company and so broad there.
That's you.
Yeah.
That's Johanna. That's cool. And you're also CEO and founder of C-Store. And let's talk more about that now. What is C-Store?
Yes. So C-Store is a climate tech startup that I founded in the beginning of this year, in February. And it's a new concept. How to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, actually, and also to be able to scale it up. It's two parts in this concept. One is how to capture carbon dioxide And this concept is based in the ocean. So it's actually how you capture carbon dioxide from the seawater so that the seawater takes up more from the air. So it's an indirect direct capture from the air, you could say. And the second part is, okay, so now you captured a lot of carbon dioxide. That is great if it works. But what are you going to do with this carbon dioxide? What is the way to treat it? So today we only have solutions where you have to store carbon dioxide geologically. Since it's a gas, it's really hard, and you have to do it like for thousands of years. So the second part of this concept is how to convert the carbon dioxide, the gas, to another compound that you can release back to the ocean. So you don't need this storage anymore. And both of those innovations are the base of this full concept.
And this you have come up with yourself?
Yeah, actually it's two innovations that I'm the inventor to them. And it's a long process, of course. I thought about this, how this huge problem that everybody knows that we have to cut emissions to zero in a very short time for the climate crisis. But we also actually have to remove gigatons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in order to stay in the 1.5 and 2 degrees limits. So this is really the challenge. How can you capture carbon dioxide diluted in the air in parts per millions? And do that in a gigaton scale per year. So this is what I started to think about. And I started to look at the solutions already on the table that we have today. So it's not that many, but we have, for instance, direct air capture. There is a site on Iceland where you actually filter the air directly from carbon dioxide and remove it. But since it's so diluted, so you have to filter such an enormous amount of air. You need a lot of energy. So it's really hard to scale it up. And it's also hard with economics because you need a lot of energy for those fans to run. So this is one way to do it. The second way is to use, you actually use the bio, the only way the nature has, it's the photosynthesis. So everything that grows takes up carbon dioxide from the air. And when you burn it, you can collect the carbon dioxide directly from your point source, so to say. So this is called bio-CCS. So this is the two ways, more or less, that are mostly mature that do carbon removal.
But none of these are like scalable, you would say, on this amount that you need to collect or capture.
Yeah, if you look first on the direct air capture, the limits there, it's really in the concept. So you have the carbon dioxide is so diluted, so you need such a lot of energy to filter the air and to run those fans. So it's really hard to scale it because it's so expensive. And the second one with the bio-CCS, it has more potential because you have the carbon dioxide very concentrated from the burning. But then you have to burn a lot of biomass. So you really have to, that is really the limit of that concept because you need a lot of biomass and you have to burn it. If you're going to do it, in Sweden we have a lot of forest, we can do this here. But if you look globally, we don't. That is not the case. This was what I started to look at, and I tried to, and I just kind of realized that this is not going to make the job. We're not going to be able to scale this up to this gigaton scale in such a short time. And then I looked at the ocean. The ocean does already do this for us. The ocean has taken up 30% of our emissions already. So I just had a feeling that there might be something in the ocean that we can kind of use and understand and see if we can find another solution for it. So this was the starting point for me.
How did you end up like starting to think about this? Have you always been passionate about sustainability, or like was it a specific event that triggered this, or how did you start to think about how to solve the world's problem, like the hardest problem?
I've always been curious, and I always even since when I decided to study material science at KTH, I just thought, like, if I can understand how materials work, then I can understand everything, because everything is made from materials. So this is kind of my way. And also with nanotechnology, it was just the curiosity to understand more. And then it's also very good background if you want to solve problems, because it's a very broad. Both nanotechnology and material science is like you have physics, you have chemistry, you have actually also biology. You have a very broad toolbox to use when you think about technical solutions. But I also had I always been very concerned about the future, of course, and the climate crisis, and also the feeling of that this cannot be everything there is to it. Kind of that feeling that when you start to understand the technology that exists and really the limits of it, then it triggers you to to kind of look for another answer.
That's for the capturing part, and then what do you do with it later when you have captured it? Your second idea here.
Yeah, okay. So the second idea is really, it's a new process, how to convert carbon dioxide to another compound, or other compounds, I would say.
Can you say what compound, or maybe that's a secret?
Right now, I'm just in the middle of the patent filing of this, so I can't say so much more than on one side it comes in carbon dioxide and on the other side it comes out something else. So the carbon in carbon dioxide is not any longer in the same molecule, and it's not definitely not going up in the air and making the climate warm. So this is the whole point. I mean, we don't remove anything. Carbons are still there, but they are there in another shape.
And then, so you file this patent now because you have a process where you can convert the carbon dioxide, so it doesn't need to be stored
anywhere.
Yes,
exactly. And this kind of solution, the convert carbon convert solution, you can really apply it. It doesn't have to be in the ocean. It can be done directly integrated in the industry today, where you already have carbon capture or planning for carbon capture, which is planned, for instance, for Stockholm Exergi. So this is really a way to directly go to existing customers. So that is also kind of a track that is maybe faster. I mean, the full concept and the vision, long-term vision, is still a full solution that captures carbon dioxide from the ocean in a very cost and energy efficient way and convert it at the same location and release it back. So you get a negative emission from the same spot in the ocean. And you have this huge scale-up potential of the ocean, which is 70% of the surface of the planet. But the fast track now would be to have a pilot together with the customers that already have carbon capture as part of their business, to help them with the solution for converting it, so they don't need to buy the storage solution. So this is a way to kind of develop that process for the industry first, in order to use it also in the future, the ocean plants.
Is it any competitors out there, or is it just to store it and you don't need to do with it? Like,
I mean, both this direct air capture is a competitor. They are already They already have a plant like on Iceland, and they sell those carbon credits from the plant in advance. So they sell it before they've done the negative emission.
Okay.
And also, there are coming up more and more bio CCS plants. So their business case is based on that they can sell this carbon credit for the tons of carbon dioxide that they take out from the atmosphere.
But they take it out, but what do they do with the carbon dioxide after that? Do they convert it or store it?
There are plants going on now to store it in the Nordic Sea, for instance. So there are a lot of investment. Norway is very far ahead. So there are investments to put up this kind of storage places in the ocean and geologically. And on Iceland, they have also demineralized the carbon dioxide because they have a special geology on that island. So they also have a way to store it. So this is in the planning right now. I don't think it's so much any carbon dioxide stored yet for this long-term storage yet. But there are plans and there are contracts being written now for the future for the captured carbon dioxide.
But your invention here, innovation, the number two, to convert it, that's like state of the art. Like, it doesn't exist at the moment.
Yeah, it will be new.
You touched upon it a little bit about this emission, what do you say, rights? No.
The carbon credits.
Carbon credits, exactly. How does the business model look like for carbon capturing technique? That's actually a question from Sara Hermansson, our other co-host of the podcast. She really wanted to know this. So
it's a market that's starting to form right now around it. It's also a very growing market because demand will be very increased, and also it doesn't exist so many carbon removal solutions. So this is it's also different partners that buy those carbon credits. So there are already companies that are willing to pay quite a lot for those first tons that are captured and stored. But there are also states that are planning to pay for those solutions, like Sweden, for instance. We have the Energy Agency. They will actually pay those companies that can do this the cheapest way.
Mm.
So there are different ways to get it paid. But also, in the long run, you see companies all over the world are hard to find ways to reach net zero, but they all have to do it. So this is also a way to... if you can come up with a solution that are in the same cost level as it costs to emit, then you have a business around that also. There are some industries in the hard-to-abate industry that have the largest challenges to reach a net zero production. For instance, the cement industry.
So maybe they will not reach like zero in production themselves, but they will emit some and then they buy somebody else to take this carbon dioxide up, or for you to capture it.
Yeah, and that could be a way.
And clean it, yeah. Basically after them.
And they have to pay for their emissions. So there is also a market if you can really reach this really low cost levels for carbon removal. For where it's almost as cheap as remove carbon dioxide as it is to emit it.
Is it possible, like, if your solution, it's scalable, it will solve, like, the problem with carbon dioxide in the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
can we go, we talk about this 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees, can it go back to, like, zero? Like, can we, like, save everything that we have, like, destroyed over so many years?
If the scale is really at that level needed, I mean, the problem is the carbon dioxide in the air. If we can find a way to take it out, that is reasonably cheap and possible to scale up, then we can make that happen. But I mean, the first is of course to stay beyond, stay lower than 2 or 1.5 degree. Of course, that is the first goal, and that goal is really hard to get, or as it is.
Yeah. Okay, so you have your technique now. You have like very high degree of innovation. What's the next step for you? You touched upon it a little bit, to work together with different companies to try this convert step. Is that so? If the next step, what's the next step for you to commercialize this?
Yeah, so right now, the first really initial target for this is the Pruvo concept. And it's a kind of different Pruvo concepts for the carbon capture and the carbon convert. So if you talk about the carbon capture, I mean, it's not just to prove that you can actually capture carbon dioxide from the ocean. You have to prove that you can do it with this much energy and you get this amount of carbon dioxide out. So you really want to know, you want to have an indication of the cost per ton carbon dioxide from your solution, and that is possible to build it and so on. So this is a kind of bigger proof of concept and more complex. You have to do both prototypes and more experimental tests. You have to measure the carbon dioxide levels in the ocean at different levels. But you also have to make simulation data models of a full system and see how is the energy balance. So this is more input, more cost to make that proof of concept. But when it comes to the... I just also want to say, even if it's more work to do, it is a great potential. So it's still so much worth to do that first pre-study and that first project, of course. And the second one is the convert process. It's so much simpler because you can make it in a lab. You can make it. You just have to measure. You measure carbon dioxide in. You measure what you get out. And if you can prove that this gets out there on the other side, it's just a lab test. So it's much easier proof. Of course, you also have to measure the energy input and so on. But it's not like you have to go out to the ocean and build something.
It's only you in the company right now?
Yeah, right now it's me. I have a couple of people that I want to bring into the company when it's when there are more funding for it. Yeah, so right now it's just me. And also this proof of concept phase is very... I feel I have to run this until I have a proof of concept, at least for the carbon convert process, until I can talk more about the solution and to get more funding and scale it up. But right now it's only me.
I'm a little bit, before we will move into funding as well, to talk about that. Of course, money is a big part of making this work. But like back to the, like what you do first, the proof of concept that you said, like the capture, carbon capturing is more like tricky to, or bigger, the proof of concept, than the convert part, carbon convert is easier. It's that why you chose to do the convert part first?
Both because it's easier, and I know I don't need external funding for that to do the lab test. And the next phase will be next step in the proof of concept would be to have someone external verifying the test, of course. And then it's the next step would be to develop the technique with a bigger prototype that you can show the process, and also preparing for a pilot project. So you develop the prototypes and you do a lot of tests and experimental tests and to see how a pilot could be made.
If you would guess in time for like carbon convert prototype, Are we like 10 years away or is it 2 years, just so we get the
feeling?
Yeah.
So my plan is to have the IP for the process ready this year and done the first tests, hopefully get them verified in the end or beginning of next year. And then starting a collaboration with partners, potential customers quite soon, and preparing for a pilot. And my target is actually to start a pilot project in the mid of next year.
That's soon.
Yeah.
That's promising.
It's very soon. Maybe I have to eat this up.
Should always have big plans, so that's really good. But that takes us actually really nicely to the next question, like how do you survive this with the money? Like, do you do soft funding, or like how do you make this happen?
So it's right now I have applied for soft funding. I think it's I got only 100,000 yet for the verification on the patent, to do the novelty search for the patents. But I also applied for Vinnova, but it's really tricky when you don't even have the patent filed yet, because you can't say that much about what you want to do. And I think it's really tricky to get soft funding this early. Just in a few months, when we have the first test result and we have the patent filed, then it will be much easier to say exactly what we want to do. And then I think it's really much easier. And it's also more, the energy agency has a program called Industriklivet. And this really fits well, because it's all about to cut the emissions from the industry. So this is really fits very well to that program. So there you can apply for a pre-study or feasibility study, and also pilot project with up to 70% funded. And then the other part is the 30% you have to find somewhere else. There are ways to go externally, of course, with an investment. But there are also, I think there is a lot of interest from customers that already had that it will bring so much to them if they could have a solution to convert the carbon dioxide that they plan to capture and cut cost. So this is the...
So you can do it in partnerships as well, like
yeah.
They pay for part of the prototype and stuff like that. Before we record this session, I talked to people about that I will talk to you, and then they're like, oh my god, we need to invest in that company, C-Store. It sounds so awesome. But that, I know, what's your take on that, like to bring in like external capital and what to think about? Because soft funding, of course, then you don't need to, they will not own part of your company. You get money basically and they follow up on your project. But like to take in external capital from like a person or VC or whatever, then they will own your company. So what's your take on, what's your plan there?
Yeah, my plan is, now it's way too early. I don't want anyone to invest in something that I need to have the proof first before. And so that is my first target. But even if this fits very well into soft funding, both in Sweden and EU, it's still, I think, it's a possibility to bring in external. Because it's not just the financing of it; it's also people that bring something more into the as experience and also how to grow a business and to grow really a company. This I never done this before, so I think that kind of experience is so much worth apart from just the financing part. So I'm open to that when we have come one more step.
It sounds like really tricky when you have these long like development cycles. I don't know, can you call this deep tech?
Yeah, it's really deep tech because it's a new technology that has to be developed before you reach the market. But also, and we also are just in a deep tech program at Sting. So, that is their longest program because they know that this kind of companies need more time to develop and go to market.
For the people that doesn't really know deep tech, like what would you say is your definition?
I think it's where it's a lot of technology development before you have a product.
Yeah, because it's hard. Like, you don't have any salary. 1.5, 2 years. For some people, it might be 10 years. Like, you need the money. You need the house to live. Like, how do you solve that?
Right now, I don't solve it. I use my savings right now. But I also have a little small house. It's called the Attefalls house that I rent out. So that covers a part of my cost. But I mean, of course, I can't go on like this for several years. So this is just the way to do it right now, because I didn't want to wait. And I know that I can't do this in parallel with working at another company. I have to go all in. It has to be running like a buffalo. When you have something you believe in and can really make a difference, and you just have to go for it, and you find a way.
If you could give like your best tips on, you have this idea, how do you commercialize it, especially then for deep tech, like how do you go about it for a person that like sits on this really really great idea and they're wondering, should I do this or should I not? What's your best tip?
The decision is, I think it's really, it's a stomach feeling. You have to feel it, that this is what you're going to do. And you have a really strong why for what you do. And the way to go to market, I think if you don't have the knowledge of the market yourself, make sure you bring in those persons to the company very early. So you have to really understand the basic needs and problems of that market. And that is the way also to finance parts of the development. Because if you can attract the customers early, talking about the potential of your solution, then you can have them on the way through the whole development phase. And you will learn from them also how to make this product as good as possible to fit into their, so that I would say really to have the as much links to the market and customers that you are going to early.
Thank you so much, Johanna, for joining our podcast. It was really lovely to have you and hear more about C-Store, and looking forward for you to save the world, basically. So we need to have you back on the podcast when you can tell us some more. Really nice to have you, and good luck with everything.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening. And remember, innovation makes the impossible possible, and it all starts with you.